Ionian Greeks, the Greeks who lived over on the Aegean coast of Anatolia. Now, this was a world that was open to Persia. As we've seen in earlier lectures, it had been conquered by the Persians. It rebelled against the Persians. Intellectual traditions passed back and forth very easily in that part of the world. It meant that this was an area which, through the Persians, was open to Mesopotamian learning earlier. There were great commercial cities in Ionia. People from Ionia traveled all over the Greek world, all over the Mediterranean world. So, even if we can't trace specific ideas as having come from this person or this place at that moment to another person or another place at another moment, it's a reasonable inference that Ionia was a very lively intellectual environment. And there, about the year 600, a man called Thales gets our story started for us. He began to ask questions about how things had come into existence. How did things come into being? Then he began to reflect a little bit on sort of what's out there. You know, if I look out through my eyes, what do I see? What is all of that? He decided that a way of explaining this was to say that water was behind everything. Now, did he mean that everything is made of water, or that everything had started as water and sort of became something else? That's not so clear. What is clear is that he was trying to find something that subsists, something that is behind everything, something that is permanent, something that is unchanging, something in a way that is the hook on which you can hang things. Now, to this day, if a scientist is to conduct an experiment, you've got to control something in order to measure other things against it. Now, at the most sophisticated levels of science and mathematics, we're now learning how actually to control several things at once and compare several things against them. But in a simpler time, you control one thing and you measure other things against it. In a certain sense, that's what Thales was intuiting. You got to get something that stays put so that you can understand other things in relation to it. Now, some of Thales' successors posed other materialist answers. We say materialist not because we're speaking of Marxian materialism. That's not the point. They were looking for materials. Thales had posed water as this substance. Others, in asking questions about what is the world made of, posed different answers. For example, one of them says earth, air, fire, and water. Now, remember when we talked about Mesopotamian religion? We said that even if some of the answers that they gave, some of the conclusions they reached strike us as primitive, strike us as naive, there was something interesting about it in the way that they were trying to systematize the world out there and to put names on things and to make sense of it. Let's think about that earth, air, fire, and water. Remember, this is at the level of sheer intuition. These thinkers are not working in great laboratories financed by companies or universities or something. If we imagine fire as a catalyst, well, earth, air, and water just about do cover everything, don't they? I mean, he'd almost intuited actually how things do work. Think of these things as a kind of a periodic chart of the elements in embryo. And there's a remarkable piece of intuition here. Now, another said fire. In other words, looked basically for the catalytic element, the element that forces things to move, forces things to move, forces things to change. They began to realize that one of the interesting problems they were going to contend with was change. How do you cope with the problem of change? What is change? Well, Parmenides, who really flourished as Pericles was coming on the scene in Athens, said that being, this substance that we're looking for, must be one, motionless, uniform, and eternal. Now, what that really represents is an attempt to add definition, to add substance, to add meaning to the very intuitive processes that had begun with Thales. We're really trying to give a little more precision to whatever this thing is that we're going to try to pin down in order to understand other things in relation to it. So being must be one, motionless, uniform, and eternal. Now, on this view, change was illusory. Change didn't really take place. Now, in a certain sense, and this is an issue we'll tease out in several different ways over the next few minutes, but right away what we can say is that Parmenides is actually answering one of his contemporaries, one of his predecessors, a man with the name of Heraclitus. Heraclitus' motto, was Pantare, everything flows. He's the one who said you can't stick your foot in the same river twice, because if you stick your foot in the river, and you withdraw your foot, and you stick your foot in again, the river has flowed on, you've stuck your foot in a new river. Well, he didn't really believe that, but he was making a rather interesting point, that everything changes. For Heraclitus, change was that which was immutable. paradoxically.